Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Talking Hockey Sense. I'm Chris Peters. It's episode 101 of the podcast. Thanks for everybody that tuned in to our 100th episode last week, which was wall-to-wall questions from our listeners. And we got a lot of that again today, but it is a very important week on the hockey calendar because it is finally the time where we start to learn what the World Junior Championship is going to look like, because a lot of teams are announcing their preliminary camp rosters, and that includes the United States and Canada, which we will spend a lot of time on today. We'll also talk a little bit about Team Sweden's roster, because I think that's a very important roster, not just as the tournament hosts, but as a credible threat for the gold medal at this year's event. So we will talk about them as well. And then, as always, answering your questions, and they are all World Junior related today. So if you are getting hyped up for the World Junior Championship, as I am, and as I always am, then you are going to really enjoy this episode, and it'll help get you ready for the weeks ahead, which will include camps, it will include cuts from those camps, and then it will include ultimately the tournament the day after Christmas. Flow Hockey will be on the ground in Sweden as we cover the World Junior Championship, and we have a ton of coverage for you right now on flowhockey.tv. You can see our assessments of Canada's roster, of USA's roster. I just did an additional piece on Team USA that has a little bit more in-depth on the decisions and the cuts that were made, and then also some analysis of Sweden's roster. As I mentioned, I think that'll be a very important team in this tournament for a variety of reasons that we'll get into later. But I'm really excited. It's an exciting time, and I hope that you guys are excited too, because obviously you got the holiday season going, everybody's in a good mood, and then you wash it down with the World Juniors. I mean, it does not get better than that. So let's get into things a little bit today. Before we do that, I do want to mention, if you haven't yet, as always, subscribe to the podcast, follow us on YouTube, follow us on flowhockey.tv or via the Flow Sports app. You can watch every episode. Very excited to continue doing that. Also, read everything you can at flowhockey.tv. We've got a lot of pieces up about the World Juniors, but we're continuing our coverage of the USHL, of college hockey, of the ECHL, of all of our leagues. Lots of highlights and different things like that. And last but not least, if you haven't yet, subscribe to Flow Hockey today, because we have so many live games, literally thousands per week. It's insane. Got a lot of showcases coming up for the youth hockey teams. We've got, obviously, the GLI for college hockey, which is a great holiday tournament. We've got CCHA, Atlantic Hockey, ECHL, USHL, CJHL, BCHL. I mean, I can give you a ton of different HLs. We got them. And so make sure you subscribe today to Flow Hockey. All right, let's move on to the topics at hand today. And we start today with USA roster reaction. The roster came out on Monday. Again, full roster analysis over at Flow Hockey, player by player analysis on Flow Hockey. So make sure you read that, but we will also abridge that for you right here on the podcast. But a couple of notes. We've got a lot of returning players from last year's team, including Rucker McGroarty, Cutter Gauthier, Jimmy Snuggerud, Lane Hutson, Trey Augustine, Seamus Casey, who didn't actually end up playing last year but was on the roster, Gavin Brindley. And then there were two potential returnees that did not make the camp roster, Charlie Stramel from the University of Wisconsin and Minnesota Wild prospect, and Andrew Oak, who was the number three goalie who played for the Saginaw Spirit or plays for the Saginaw Spirit. Those players did not make it. But you look at those returning players, and that's really the foundation of this team. Lane Hutson's probably going to be the number one defenseman. Cutter Gauthier is going to be a big-time scorer for this team, likely a top-line player. Or at least a second line player, depending on which order they end up going in for, the top six for Team USA. But I think you'll see Gauthier get a ton of ice time. You've got your starting goaltender returning in Trey Augustine. However, I do think there could potentially be a goalie competition with him and Jacob Fowler, which we'll talk a little bit about in just a few seconds. But, you know, I think that as we look at this U.S. roster, there weren't a ton of huge surprises, but there were surprises. I mean, you know, we talked about it on last week's episode. I had gotten the intel that Stramel was not going to be part of the team. I had gotten some indications that Hunter Brustevich was not going to be part of the team, despite the fact that he's on pace for nearly 100 points or over 100 points in the OHL this year with the Kitchener Rangers. Cole Yzerman, top prospect, one of the top prospects for the 2024 NHL draft, also did not make the camp. So those were moderate surprises. There were some surprising additions as well. You know, there were a couple of guys that didn't play in the summer camp that made this camp, including Patrick Geary and Aaron Minetian, who each played college hockey. And then also you had Geary over at Michigan State, Minetian at Boston College. And also he, of course, was part of the National Team Development Program last year, won gold at last year's World Under 18 Championship. So those were, you know, if you weren't kind of in the know, a bit surprising to see that, to see guys that didn't come out. But largely, I think that a lot of what we saw in the summer camp translated to what this roster looks like now. Up front, there were a couple of surprises as well. You know, Quinn Finley and William Whitelaw both play at the University of Wisconsin, where Charlie Stramel plays. They both make it over him. They also make it over Cruz Lucius, who I thought has actually had a really great season and thought had some ability to play. But Quinn Finley, William Whitelaw, where they fit in this roster, really not, you know, clear to me at this point. You know, I think that there are options for them. Also, there's the potential that McGroarty's injury, which we talked about last week, which, you know, we don't have a ton of clarity on what it is. The thing that I've been told is that it's something that, you know, has an uncertain timeline. It's something that he's going to have to kind of work through, and they're going to probably give him every opportunity to work through that. Rucker McGroarty will be a very important player. But you get a guy like William Whitelaw, who has some abrasiveness in his game, doesn't have the level that McGroarty brings, but I think that he's got something, you know, a little bit of grit, a little bit more tenacity that he can bring to the table. So, you know, those guys provide some insurance. If McGroarty's unable to go, I think that really opens up a lot of opportunities for a guy like Isaac Howard to potentially be in the top nine forward group. And you know, those are the types of things that kind of happen over the course of a camp. I've been at this camp before where things change at kind of the drop of a hat. Player gets injured, all of a sudden you got to do something different. You know, there's a lot of different things that kind of come into play there. But the thing that the most surprising ad was a player that just wasn't on my radar at all, and that's Sam Hillebrandt, who is going to be the number three goalie for this team, plays for the Barrie Colts in the OHL. And he was not a player that really was on my radar. He's played 18 games in the OHL over the last two seasons. You know, and I think that kind of speaks to the fact that this U.S. goalie, you've got two great goalies at the top. You've got Trey Augustine, Jacob Fowler. Those two are your guys. The third goalie may not matter as much, but you get a guy like Hillebrandt, who has another year of eligibility remaining, could potentially be on the team, you know, next year. Augustine has another year of eligibility remaining as well. But, you know, having players that have extra eligibility, sometimes that helps in that third goalie slot. But, you know, Hillebrandt was not in the summer camp. You know, Hampton Slikinski, who I thought was great in the summer camp, is actually going to the World Junior A Challenge, where he's actually probably going to play a lot more. I like that decision to send him there as opposed to bring him as a third goalie where he's probably not going to play. So those are kind of the other roster decisions that had some level of intrigue here for Team USA. But just to kind of circle back, I have a lengthy piece that kind of goes into detail about some of the roster surprises that we talked about. We have some questions about these roster cuts as well. But getting back to Brustevich, we talked about it last week, the fact that you had Hutson and Seamus Casey and then Zeev Bouyum. You know, Seamus Casey's the top scoring defenseman in college hockey. You know, Lane Hutson is on pace for close to 20 goals this season in college hockey. Was a Hobie Top 10 finalist last year. And then Zeev Bouyum was just named the co-player of the month for the entire country after having 14 points in 8 games from the back end. So as good as Brustevich has been in the OHL, and he has been good, those are three players that are doing it at a similar level. Hutson and Bouyum are left shots. Casey is a right shot. The thing is that probably Hutson and Casey and Bouyum are all their power play roles are probably defined. And then now there's no room for Hunter Brustevich. And does that player make sense as a number six or potentially number seven defenseman? Maybe not. And then you want some versatility, especially on a team where you are lacking balance already. You have to figure Ryan Chesley is going to be viewed as a guy that can be a shutdown guy. Drew Fortescue could potentially be a shutdown guy. Patrick Geary, who was a surprise invite, a penalty kill guy. That's the other thing. I'm not sure which defensemen are going to kill penalties, but when you have a lot of sub 6 foot defensemen, as this team does have, you have to find other ways to balance that out. And I think that's ultimately what shoved Brusevich to the side. The one thing that I would say is that I'm a little surprised that it was Aaron Manetian who had that, who was picked over Brusevich. Cause if you're looking at right shot defensemen specifically, that's a player where I think there's a similar quality, but you know, Manetian is a little less proven in terms of, you know, his ability to produce and things like that. But if he can defend at a high enough level, if he could potentially kill penalties, that changes the dynamic for his inclusion. They don't have a lot down the right side where you would call him especially defensive. And I think that that's another thing for Brustevich. As far as Iserman is concerned, this doesn't change my opinion about him as a draft prospect. I think he's still going to be a top five pick in this upcoming draft. He does have more points than James Higgins, who was selected for Team USA, but they're teammates right now at the under 18 team. But it's important to remember Higgins plays center. Team USA has to replace Logan Cooley somehow. Higgins has a similar skill set. He can drive play. He's a very intelligent player. He plays with good pace. You know, I think for Iserman, he wasn't going to unseat Cutter Gauthier. He wasn't going to unseat Gabe Perreault. So if you're not going to have him in your top six, where do you have him? You know, the third line, you want to have that line be a little bit more energetic, have a little bit more of a defensive mindset. The fourth line, you want them to have your penalty killers, your pace. Team USA is going to have a lot of speed in their lineup. They're going to have guys like Gavin Brindley and Oliver Moore potentially, you know, and the players like Gauthier, and that will help them improve. And then where does Cole Iserman fit? Also important to note, Cole Caulfield, who has all the records that Iserman is chasing right now in terms of single season goals and career goals at the NTDP, he also did not make Team USA as an underager for the same exact reasons. They couldn't find a spot for him in their top six. He didn't really find, there wasn't a fit for him. You know, I will say, like, I thought that Brustevich should have been in camp, and I possibly would have liked to see if Cole Iserman could have established a role, especially with Rucker McGroarty's health in question. Because McGroarty's a very good scorer. He's got a threatening one-timer. Iserman has a threatening one-timer. You know, those are the types of things that you think about. But in the end, not selected. Not a huge surprise to me. But also at the same time, I think, you know, if you're a draft fan and you're not seeing Cole Iserman in this tournament, you're disappointed. But to me, I thought that that was, of the forward cuts, one of the ones that made the most sense to me. Because if you don't have him up in the lineup, it's really hard to find a place for him. All right, so that is a little bit of my intel on USA. We're going to have more questions about Team USA in the Q&A portion a little bit later in the show, so stick around in case things are there. And if I don't answer a question that you have, always feel free to reach out to me on Twitter or X or what have you, at Chris M. Peters, because I will potentially answer it right here on the podcast. All right, let's move on to Canada's roster. Now, Team Canada is always going to be one of the favored teams. Somebody sent me some of the betting odds, and Canada is still favored. At least that was before the roster announcements. As we got Canada's roster announcement, a couple things stuck out right away. Number one, there was some uncertainty on whether or not Zach Benson would be part of Team Canada's camp, currently playing with the Buffalo Sabres. As of right now, he's not part of the camp. I don't believe that he will be released. And so that is another player that Canada loses. It's the same story every year. They're going to have players that don't play in the that don't play in junior anymore, and now they're in the NHL, so you don't have them available. Connor Bedard this year, Zach Benson, Shane Wright, Matthew Poitras, all age eligible players, not playing. Tristan Luno, however, is released by the Anaheim Ducks to play in the tournament, so they have some of that. This is a team that's not going to have a ton of experience at their disposal. Owen Beck is back on the roster. You know, he was a big part of the team last year. They're not getting Kevin Korchinski back from the Chicago Blackhawks, another player that, you know, they have to go forward without, that really does impact their blue line. However, when you look at the Canadian roster, there's plenty to like about it. I mean, this is a team that has you know, 10 first round draft picks on it. They have a really good forward group. But I think if you are looking at this roster, you might be a little bit underwhelmed. They have 4 undrafted players on it, which is kind of rare for this stage of the camp. And it's not just first year draft eligible players, because I'm not including Macklin Celebrini in that group, but he is also on the roster. And so that is an interesting dynamic where you have spots that are taken by guys that aren't necessarily high-end NHL draft prospects like you normally would. But Canada's in a situation where they have a lot of guys that are currently in the NHL and they have to find ways to plug those holes. Nobody's going to feel sorry for them, and certainly every team is going to continue to go after them. But I think that if you look at the roster on paper, very difficult to say that this Canadian team will be the favorite in this tournament. And I'm sure that is going to end up on a bulletin board somewhere in the Canadian dressing room. And that's the kind of the approach that I believe this team is going to have to take. They're going to have to be, you know, us against the world like they usually are anyway. But this time it's actually a little bit more underdog story. So that will be fascinating to watch. But I think one of the things that I find, fascinating about this team is what role will our projected top prospect Macklin Celebrini play in this tournament. As you look down the middle of their lineup, you have guys like Connor Geeky, you have Nate Danielson. Is there a case that Max Celebrini should be a top tier center on this team? Maybe he plays the wing. We'll have to find out. But he was dominant at the under-18 World Championship last year, was one of the best scorers in Canadian history at that tournament, and as an underager, helped them win the bronze medal. And I think that with Macklin Celebrini, that's a player that can still take over games. I think he has a chance to be really special in this tournament and will be a big factor for this Canadian team. Having a guy like that on your roster goes a long way in this tournament. This is the kind of tournament we saw it in other instances where Nico Hischier took over a game once, where he just basically put his team up on his back and said, I can do this. And they almost beat the U.S. in a quarterfinal one year. We've seen goalies take over games as well, but those forwards and defensemen that find a way to do it can really give their team a chance. I think that's Macklin Celebrini's, goal. Some of the other guys I'm really excited to watch in this tournament, the guys I think that will be there, Brayden Jaeger, it's going to be more his show than it's ever been. He's one of the top drafted players on this team. Matt Savoy, who had NHL experience this year, who's played in the AHL. A guy who missed out on this opportunity last year. That's going to be a fascinating to watch. I think other players here too, what role do they ultimately play? Denton Mateychuk, a really solid puck moving defenseman, doesn't have a tremendous size relative to the rest of this blue line. Does Canada bring the two massive defensemen in their camp, Maverick Lamoureux and Noah Warren? 6'6" for Noah Warren, 6'7" for Lamoureux. Lamoureux being a first round pick of the Arizona Coyotes, and Noah Warren being a second round pick of the Anaheim Ducks. And you say, does this Canadian roster have necessarily the pace, the ability to keep up? You got guys like Easton Cowan, who you feel like you probably will have there. Fraser Minton, who got NHL time this year. So this is still a very competitive roster. It might not be as an inspiring a roster, but it is a good roster. And that brings us to the topic that I feel like is every single year in the World Junior Championship. Who's going to be the goalie that leads this team this year? Last year, it was Thomas Milic, undrafted, ended up getting drafted at the end of the year. This year, it could be a similar story. Mathis Rousseau is currently the odds-on favorite, I guess you could say, depending on who you talk to be the starter. Undrafted, under 6 feet, currently playing in the QMJHL. So goaltending, obviously, a critical piece for your team. Canada has 2 drafted goalies, 2 undrafted goalies in camp. Scott Ratzlaff from the Seattle Thunderbirds, and then you've got Dominic DeVincentis from the North Bay Battalion, both of them drafted, but both late draft picks. So we're not talking about high-end prospects at the goaltending position. So what do we have for Canada? What will this look like? And if it is Rousseau, is he going to be able to handle what's in front of him. And that's going to be the real story of Canada's tournament. Can they get the goaltending? And if they do, do they have enough up front? Do they have enough at the back end to compete with the likes of Sweden and the U.S.? Because I think that both of those teams, at least on paper to me, are deeper or have, you know, I'm more comfortable with their goalies as well. So that's the other factor. But make no mistake, this is the World Junior Championship. Canada always finds a way. They might not win the whole thing, but they are always going to find a way to be competitive. This is a team that I think has enough pieces to do that, but that's going to be fascinating to watch. So I think that that's going to be something that will bear more focus as we get going, because I think Canada is going to be a team that, you know, while not as formidable as they could be, is certainly a threat, because, well, they always are. So let's see what we got here on the next front, because I am so excited to see this team live, because I think they are going to be fun, and I think that they're going to make some noise in this tournament. So we move on now from Canada to Sweden. And Sweden, to me, is going to be, you know, they're on home ice for one, which is always a motivating factor. They're going to have the crowd behind them. I think Gothenburg is going to get behind this team in a major way. They're going to have a number of players that are really exciting to watch. And I can't wait to see what that looks like in the home of Frölunda. And that will be really cool. Unfortunately for Sweden, the best player in the age group will not be in this tournament. Leo Carlsson, currently playing for the Anaheim Ducks. There was some discussion that maybe because of this Ducks load management plan that they have Leo Carlsson on, that maybe he might get loaned to the World Juniors, especially since it's in his home country. No dice. Sweden did announce their full roster on Wednesday morning. And on that roster, 23 players. So that's the group that they're going with. This isn't a preliminary roster. This is their group. And that roster is loaded. It really is. They have 7 first-round draft picks on their roster. They've got some great players on the back end. They've got some scoring talent up front. And they have a good goaltender who's undrafted, Hugo Haviland. But he is a gold medal-winning under-18 goalie and stole a gold medal right off the necks of Team USA a couple of years ago in one of the greatest individual goaltending performances I had seen at the under-18 World Championship. So you don't have Carlsson, but you've got a lot else, which I think is really important for this team in particular, because, you know, this is a team that's going to have to win with depth. They're going to have everything kind of clicking the right way. But the players that I think are really going to make the biggest difference for this group is on the blue line. I think they've got a really talented blue line. Axel Sandin Pellikka was basically the number one defenseman last year. He's having a great season in the SHL. He should have a lot of confidence. He's got experience. That matters. Tom Willander from Boston University also making the team. He was not in the summer camp. He's on the final roster. He's been awesome at BU this year. Great skater, tremendous defensively. Expect him to get a lot of tough matchups. And then there are the other guys that maybe you don't know as well, like Elias Salomonsson, who is a Winnipeg Jets draft prospect, a big defenseman who has added more to his game, who has rounded out his game, plays much more mature, much more confident. That matters an awful lot as well. So very intrigued by that, that mix that they're going to have on the blue line that I think is going to really help carry this team. Up front, they're going to have an absolute wagon, though. I mean, you've got Jonathan Lekkerimäki, who's having a tremendous season in the SHL. You've got Liam Ogren. You've got Noah Östlund. You've got Otto Stenberg, Philip Bystedt. I mean, we're just naming the first rounders. But I also like the depth that they're bringing. Guys like Zeb Forsfjell, guys like Felix Unger Sorum, guys that can play roles down the lineup and still be threatening players. You've got, you know, David Edstrom. You've got Theo Wahlberg. They've got size up front too. So there's a little mix of everything for this team. Excuse me. And so with that, there's balance and there's depth and there's you know, guys that have had success internationally. Don't forget, this is a team that finished in fourth place last year in one of the craziest bronze medal games I've ever seen between the U.S. and Sweden. I mean, Sweden was down and out. They come all the way back, and then they lose in overtime. Just an insane game that, you know, actually was one of the games where I really thought, hey, Luke Hughes might be a big-time player because he did score the game-tying goal in that one, and that was a phenomenal game. But, you know, to have so many guys that felt the sting of last year where they lost to Czechs in a semifinal that was just an incredible hockey game. Great to be there for that. You know, they've got a bit of a chip on their shoulder with enough guys that experienced that heartbreak last year, and now they're on home ice. And you look at the coach Mattias Hävelid, he's got a really good feel for this group. He won a gold medal with them at the under-18s a couple of years ago. And the key guys from that group are here. Mattias Hävelid. You have a Hugo Hävelid, the twin brothers that are just, you know, they're going to be big-time players. And then you've got, you know, Lekker Amaki and Oslin Ogren. You know, those guys were there for that. They experienced that. And that was also, interestingly enough, at that under-18 World Championship, Leo Carlson was on that team. However, he got injured right at the beginning of the tournament. They had him. They didn't have him for much of that tournament. So they've already proven they can win without their best player. And I think this team's going to go in with confidence. And I think, you know, somebody sent me the betting odds, and I was saying, you know, the value is all on Sweden right now. The thing is, with Sweden, what's the story of their World Junior? If you know anything about the World Junior Championship and anything about the non-Canadian and U.S. teams, one of the things that you probably know is that Sweden is kind of always the bridesmaid, never the bride. They are always in second. 11 silver medals at this event. They have two gold medals. Two! And they haven't won since 2012. And that was, you know, Mika Zibanejad scoring in overtime against Russia, winning a gold medal for Sweden, hadn't won since the 80s. It's time. And I think these players feel that. And I think that they feel confident that they can do that. So Sweden, yes, they have often lost the big one at this tournament, more times than not, unfortunately for them. But this is a team that I think is a legitimate threat to win gold. And they should scare the heck out of everybody because they are good. They have talent. They have depth. They have balance. And I think that's something that they can say that not even the U.S. can say, that Canada cannot say. They have a little bit more of a team that I feel is more put together. Doesn't mean they're going to win, but I really like Sweden, and I wanted to make that abundantly clear. All right. Plenty more World Junior talk to get to, but now I turn the show over to you, the listener, and I answer your questions. And there are many, and we will get to them. They cover all teams, all positions. You know, we are going to get into it here. So we are going to start it off with Danny. And Danny just, he's coming in hot. We don't even know the final rosters yet, but Danny's coming in hot. And he asks, what is the early pick for tournament MVP? Danny, the tournament MVP. Well, here we are. We're sitting here 20 days out from the tournament. And so a lot's going to change, but let's offer some candidates for this. You know, I look at different teams and who could potentially be the standout player. You know, I'm looking at Macklin Celebrini, even though he's an underage player. If Canada is going to do damage, they need him to be a big-time player for them. They just do. He's done it at Boston University this year. He did it at the under-18 Worlds last year. That's a guy that I think absolutely has a case. As I look, you know, I think USA is a legitimate favorite for this thing. I look at Cutter Gauthier. Can he be the guy? He's played in the World Championship. He's played in the World Under-18s. He's played in the World Juniors. You know, so he's been there at every level, and he is still yet to win gold. And I think that there's a huge motivation from those players in his birth year to win this thing. And I think Gauthier is playing at a level that could allow him to be a major impact player at this tournament. Lane Hutson, same thing with him. Will he produce at the level that he has? You know, I think that some of his defensive responsibilities are not going to allow him to dominate the game offensively as much as he did, because USA is not going to just need him to be producing offense. They need him to defend too. And You know, Lane Hutson, not a big guy, but incredibly competitive and responsible defensively, despite the fact that his best attributes are his offensive skill. But he's just this ultimate competitor. So you love to see that. You know, if we're talking Sweden as a potential gold medal finalist here, I'm looking at Hugo Haviland in net. He's got to be super sharp. If he's going to be the starter, and I think he will be, but if he's going to be the starter, can he backstop Sweden to the gold medal? It might have to happen that way, even though they're as good as they are. I'm looking at Jonathan Lekkerimäki, who's scoring at will this year in the SHL and having, you know, a real resurgent couple of months in his career. You go back to the playoffs last year, the qualification playoffs, and he was playing out of his mind, point per game player. He's continued that this year. You know, you think about other guys and just being the host country, you're going to get some home cooking voting as well. And that helps because the MVP is voted on by the media. You know, and I think that that's so you look at that. You look at Axel Sandin Pellikka, who's going to play a ton. He played a ton of minutes last year, going to play even more this year, more responsible for that. So I look at those teams and I say those are the guys that have the best opportunity. Then you kind of look at some of the other countries, and you say, okay, well, if Slovakia is going to make any noise, is Dalibor Dvorsky going to have a lot to say about it? Is Adam Guyon going to be the guy? You know, so there's a lot of players like that. If I'm going to narrow it down, and you know, if I think USA goes into this tournament as the favorite, you know, I still look at guys like Will Smith as well, who had one of the greatest under 18 world championships in history. He was the MVP of that tournament last year. That's another option. So, you know, but I do think that, you know, this tournament can often be dominated by the older players. Last year we saw Connor Bedard do it as an underager, but this can often be dominated by the older players. So I'll give my early pick will go to Cutter Gauthier of Team USA. All right, next question. We get into the discussion about James Higgins and Cole Iserman and the decision to take one but not the other to this camp. And this one comes from User, which I think is a very original name. A lot of people were confused as to why Higgins made the team, but Iserman didn't. Do you think Iserman is a better prospect than Higgins? Who do you think will be better in college next season? Who has more upside long term? Good question, because, I mean, these are two players that play on the same team. Iserman draft eligible in 2024. Higgins draft eligible in 2025. A few months apart. Iserman is the guy that, you know, right now he does lead in points. He leads the under 18 team in goals. He's got 25 goals already this season. He's higher in points per game. Couple things. I don't think these two guys were competing for the same roster spot. So that's one thing. Higgins is a center. Iserman is a wing. Higgins is a guy that I think is more of a play driver. Iserman is more of a finisher. Team USA had more needs at center than they did on the wing. They have plenty of scoring wings. They don't have natural play driving centers in abundance, though they do have Will Smith, Frank Nazar, you know, whoever ends up being the fourth line center. You got guys like Oliver Moore, Danny Nelson, you know, Terry Terrance, all guys that can play in that role potentially for Team USA. So, you know, I think that the decision was difficult, but I think that if you were asking me who is the better prospect between the two players, my answer is Higgins. And Higgins doesn't have the point production right now, but as you watch him play, I just feel like he's a little more versatile. I feel like there's a little bit more overall hockey sense there that I see. I think his puck skills are a little more advanced, but this is not to say that we're talking about two guys that could be top picks in an upcoming draft. Two guys that could be top guys. And, you know, Iserman right now, anywhere, I think he could go from 2 to 5 in the draft coming up this year. But I don't necessarily, like, I think Higgins to me is the number one prospect for 2025. You know, I think we're seeing a lot of similarities to what he's doing with what was done previously by guys like Jack Hughes last year, Will Smith, you know, guys that were top picks and you know, high picks in the NHL draft. And, you know, I think Higgins has the versatility to potentially, you know, be a top six center for this team. He was awesome in their summer evaluation camp. He's been good in the games that I've watched him this year. I just think that there's a lot there with James Higgins. And if he's ready for this role and that's the key, I think he's going to have a lot of success. So I hate to pit those two against each other because they are friends. They are guys that play well with each other. They have built-in chemistry. And I think they're bright pieces of USA Hockey's future. But also to answer your question about college next season, excuse me, I think if Cole Iserman and Macklin Celebrini are paired together again, if Celebrini stays for another year at BU, I don't think anybody's going to slow those guys down. Higgins will be at Boston College. I think that they're going to have a few guys here and there that aren't part of the team that are there now, which will make it a little more difficult. So I think, you know, potentially for instant impact, I'd probably look at Iserman depending on a couple of things with how BU is constructed next year. And the same thing with Higgins. How does BC look next year? That matters a lot, especially when you're a true freshman. But I think both are going to be phenomenal college players and guys that are going to make instant impacts for their collegiate teams. And two guys I think are going to have a lot of say in where things go for both their programs. All right, our next question comes from Maxime, and this is about Team USA's goaltending. Do you think Jacob Fowler can steal the number one goalie spot for Team USA? Augustine was the number one last year, but despite his 4-1-0 record, his numbers were not really impressive. Thanks. Well, Maxime, that is a good question because I think it's one that will not be answered immediately. I think that there is a legitimate competition for the number one spot on this team. I think that the way that Jacob Fowler has played throughout the season at Boston College puts him in the mix very firmly to be the one, the number one. I think that there is the fact that Augustine has a couple of things that are different from Fowler. One is playing in this tournament last year. He's been on this stage. He understands. He played in one of the most loud buildings against Canada. And yes, his numbers don't look good, but we have to remember that the last two games were games where I thought the team in front of him was weak. And also that, you know, they were playing formidable teams like Canada and Sweden. And so for a 17-year-old goalie to go into that environment and try and win, I think is really difficult. However, Augustine greatly redeemed himself at the under 18 World Championship because just as Hugo Haviland stole the gold medal off of Team USA's neck at the previous World Under 18s, Trey Augustine took it right off of Sweden the following year. And he was the goalie in both of those games, and I think he was highly motivated. He had a tremendous performance, and that was really where I thought his draft stock skyrocketed was his gold medal game performance because he, once again on the biggest stage, played some of his best hockey. That is not going to be forgotten by Team USA staff. It's not going to be forgotten by anybody, but this is a team that will go with the best goalie. Whoever they think is the best goalie, they are going to go. And I think you can make a strong case that Jacob Fowler can supplant Trey Augustine. It's not going to happen overnight. I think there's going to be a competition. I think both of them will play both exhibition games. They will potentially split games during the preliminary round. We may not know who Team USA's number one goalie is until the medal round. Because that's when we've seen teams, you know, I think back to when Team USA was going between Tyler Parsons and Joseph Wall. And by the way, Jake Ottinger was like the third goalie on that team. And he's like a Vezina candidate, you know, like it's crazy. But Tyler Parsons, Joseph Wall, they alternated. Team USA decides eventually they're going to go with Parsons. And that's when they make the decision. It doesn't come until the medal round. So they're both excellent goaltenders. I think it's a 1A, 1B situation no matter what. USA is in a position of strength. I think those two guys are among the best goalies in this camp or in this tournament going in. And I think if you're Team USA, you have to feel real comfortable about the two guys you have between the pipes. All right. Our next one. Great question, Maxime. And I think it's going to be fascinating to watch that. All right, let's go to our next question, and this one is Blackhawks/Team USA related from at NHL Tish, and Tish asks, I've got a couple here related to Hawks prospects. Out of Frank Nazar and Oliver Moore, who is more likely to grab a spot in the top six of Team USA? Does Sam Rinzell have a good shot of making the roster, in your opinion? So to answer question one, I don't think either of those players will be in Team USA's top six. I think that the top six will include, the line from Boston College, Gabe Perreault, Will Smith, and Ryan Leonard. And then the top line will likely be Cutter Gauthier, Jimmy Snuggerud, and then potentially James Higgins. It's possible Frank Nazar could be that center. It's not out of the question that he would be that, but I think that you might want to keep Nazar with Gavin Brindley and potentially Isaac Howard or Rucker McGroarty, whoever is there. And I think that the other thing that Nazar gives you is a really solid, he's not a big guy, but he's very solid defensively. He takes good faceoffs, you know, so that's a guy that you could potentially have there in that role. So of those two, Nazar is the more likely. However, I think they're both more likely to play in the bottom six, but I think that third line, you know, we don't look at it as top six, bottom six as much anymore. I think you're really, especially at the World Juniors, that top nine is critical. And then your fourth line is usually going to be the guys that you feel like can kill penalties. And that's what I think Oliver Moore can do. He can be a depth player. He can play a certain role. And that's what Team USA needs him to do. And then next year, potentially, he'd be a number two center on the team. So that's the other thing that happens. As far as Sam Rinzell goes, I've liked the way that he's played this year at Minnesota. I think that there's been ups and downs. There's been growing pains. And this has been the story of his career because he is a project. There are things that he needs to get better at. There are things that he still is working on. But I like the player a lot. So Sam Rinzell, a really fascinating player. I do think he's got a great chance to make Team USA. A couple reasons. The size factor is important. He's Team USA's biggest defenseman by a long shot. He's got good reach. He's improving defensively. Good skater. You know, can get pucks up ice. The question that I have about him, does he process the game quickly enough to handle the pace of the World Junior Championship? And that is a legitimate question that has to be answered and can be answered in camp. You'll know quickly if a guy is behind the pace in this camp. The players are too good. So I would say that Sam Rinzell has a good chance of making it, but he is not a lock. I would say that he is a bubble, you know, on the bubble to make it. He could kind of go either way. Right shot defenseman, down that right side, you've got Ryan Chesley, you've got Seamus Casey, you've got Eric Polkamp, you've got Aaron Minettian, you know, and you've got Sam Rinzell, and he's got to beat out two of those guys for a regular role or potentially be the seventh defenseman. But I think he's got a chance. I thought he had a good start to his summer camp this year, a tough finish. But in the games that I've watched lately of Minnesota, I've liked what I've seen. I think I'm seeing progression and growth, and I'm seeing a player that's playing against top-tier talent and doing well. All right. Our next one is a little bit more of a focus on and I didn't link this one, so sorry to Amanda, my producer. I didn't put the link in here for this one, so I'm just going to read it to you, and we won't put it up on the screen, but this one is from WJC Rankings. I've done a lot of work focusing on the players eligible. I think anything other than a Sweden-USA gold medal game would be a surprise to me. Do you agree? You know, I think both Sweden and USA have the potential to finish top of their group, and if they do finish in the top of the group, the soonest they could play each other would be the gold medal game. And so I do think that they're the two best teams on paper coming in. But nothing surprises me about the World Junior Championship. We have seen crazy things. I mean, Czechia won the silver last year, you know, and got in there. And it ended up being the way that the playoff round worked out. Sweden got Czechia in the semifinals. USA got Canada. And that's, you know, and then Czechia nearly beats Canada. They take them to overtime in the gold medal game. Nobody would have seen that coming. That's why we love this tournament. That's why we love this event. But I do think Sweden and USA, to me, are the top two teams on paper. They have the best chance to finish top of their group and then could potentially play each other. Unless Sweden doesn't have a good preliminary round and they end up in second place, and then all of a sudden we're talking about potentially a USA, assuming USA finishes first in their group, which is the easier of the two groups, then they could potentially play in the semifinals. Which I think would be difficult for either of those teams. All right, moving on. Our next one is another question about Sweden, who obviously you guys can tell I have a lot of respect for here. And this one comes from frequent questioner Avco Cup. And Avco asks, Sweden looks like it has an embarrassment of riches on the back end. It does have a lot of righties, though. Who do you think they're likely to use on the offside in this case of there being no wrong answers? Sorry, is this a case of there being no wrong answers? I don't think there are wrong answers. I do think that one of the players that's best equipped to play on his offhand side is Axel Sandin Pelikka. I think he's got the versatility. He's done it before. He has really tremendous hockey sense, and I think he's an ultra competitor, and he'll just play the role that he needs to play. I think when you're a coach, you want to have a guy that you can trust, and I do think that he would have that. So I would say Axel Sandin Pelikka, probably the most likely to play on his offhand side, but at the same time, you know, I think it'll be fluid. The Swedish defensemen in this age group are quite exceptional in a lot of different ways. So Sandin Pelikka could be the guy there. Another Swedish defense question. This one comes from Katie, and she asks, does Anton Johansson see regular playing time? Anton Johansson. So Anton Johansson, of course, a very interesting player. He had a really strong summer camp this year, and I thought that was, to me, an indication that this was a player that had taken a step. The summer evaluation camp at Plymouth, excuse me, geez, I apparently can't speak right now, is really competitive. And I think that, you know, with that, you see pretty quickly players that can handle it and players that can't. And in Anton Johansson's case, I thought he played with some physicality. He played offensively. He made some plays overall. You know, this is not a guy that you're potentially going to be looking at on your roster as a scorer. But I do think that he's going to be a player that's going to play a good amount of minutes. You know, he doesn't play a ton in the SHL, not like regularly at least, but I do think he's the kind of guy that, you know, could play, you know, regular shift. This is going to be a very loaded decor. So, you know, I'm looking at guys like Matthias Havelid, Axel Sandin Pelikka, Elias Salomonsson, Tom Olander. Those are guys that I feel more comfortable with of being, you know, top four defensemen relative to Johansson. But if Johansson is a six or a five for your team, I think that shows the depth of your team. And so I do expect him to play fairly regularly. All right, our next question is another Swedish question. I love all of this. I love that you guys don't just come to me for the American questions. You want to talk about Swedes? I will talk about Swedes, and we are going to talk about one right now. This one comes from Deep Sea Hockey. Zeb Forsfjall seems like a mild surprise to make the talented Sweden World Juniors team. Thoughts on his inclusion as an 18-year-old, potential for an active checking role, or are they bringing him along to learn for future years? Any other thoughts on him as a prospect? I really, really, really like Zeb Forsfjall. Forsfjall, I hope I'm saying that right, but a guy that I like so much. But, you know, Seattle Kraken prospect, you know, kind of a late round guy. I think he's very popular among the Swedish decision makers because he has tremendous work ethic. He is not a big guy, but he plays hard. He gives them good shifts, and I do think you'll see him down their lineup. I do think that you will probably see him, you know, playing a semi-regular shift, but not to the degree of some of the top-tier scores that they have. You want a guy that has the right attitude to be in that role. You want a guy that understands that you need him to do things more than scoring, and you want a guy that's going to give the work ethic that I've seen him bring at camps, at tournaments, at everything. So I was not surprised to see him on the roster. I think that they have a lot of faith in the guys that were part of last year's World Under 18 team because they did vastly outplay USA in the game they ended up losing in the final. And guys like Forsfjall, who was one of the top players in that tournament for Sweden with 8 points, was a big part of that. And so you've seen him do it, and now you want to see it again. So it helps too. Like, he'll play an elevated role next year, but this year to have him as a depth guy, I think it's really important for Sweden to continue to build teams that will have experience for the following year. And that's one of the guys that I think falls into that category. All right. Next question on comes from Neb. And Neb asks, who are the top goaltending prospects in the tournament? All right. Well, there's actually quite a lot. Goaltending is going to be really interesting this tournament. You know, we already talked about Canada. They've got, you know, undrafted players. Their goaltending situation isn't as stable as I think some of the other countries is. USA has a 1A, 1B, you know, with Trey Augustine and Jacob Fowler. Put them in the order that you want to. Two second-round pick goaltenders. Adam Guyon, first draft goalie off of the board last year. Michael Hrabal, also a goalie drafted in the second round last year by Arizona. You've got Guyon playing for the Green Bay Gamblers in the USHL, having a strong season, getting a lot of reps, getting, you know, tougher competition. And we saw him last year at the World Junior Championship excel, put Slovakia in a position to win games. He's a reason I think Slovakia could be a dark horse. I'm saving that for the next question that we end with. But spoiler, I think that Guyon is the kind of goalie that when he's on his game, he can steal you a game. He can be a little bit inconsistent at times. He can be a little wild at times. But that's a goalie that I think gives you a chance. Czechia will have Michael Hrabal, who I think has played very well for UMass this year. A couple of shutouts already in NCAA hockey. Big body, technically sound, makes a lot of, you know, good saves and easy saves, makes a lot of them look easy. That's a good goaltending prospect right there. You look at the options that they have for Sweden, and you know, I think Hugo Haviland is not an NHL caliber prospect because he's a 5'10", 5'11" goalie. Those guys just don't get opportunities, but he is good enough to potentially steal some games. So you look at players like that, and yes, there are certainly goaltending prospects that can absolutely handle what's being thrown at them here. I think the goaltending will be really fascinating to watch. A lot of guys that went early in the draft last year, now we'll get a chance to see them up close and personal. All right, so we've talked about Sweden. We've talked about goalies. We've talked about Canada. We've talked about USA. Let's talk about the Czechs. I love it. We got a question about Czechia. I actually got two questions about it, but I'm going to combine it into one. I'm going to take Bhawks 0035. And also this another one from Dana 4545, who asks questions a lot, and we get Dana on a lot, but I went with Bhawks 0035, who asks, I would love to hear your thoughts on Czechia. I am very high on them and think they can duplicate the success they had in last year's tournament. What do you think? Excuse me. Thanks for all your hard work. Well, thank you for the nice words. All right. So the Czechs are going to be interesting because there are a couple of things that we don't have a full handle on at this very moment. We don't have their roster, for one. We do not know for sure if Jiří Kulik will be released by the Buffalo Sabres to participate in this tournament. And if he is, that drastically changes the dynamic for this team, because I think he could be an elite scorer in this tournament. I think he could be a guy that makes a huge difference and can put them over the top. You know, they won't have a couple of key guys that have aged out. And that'd be David Juracek and David Spacek, who were, to me, outside of the goaltending that they got from Tomas Suhonek last year, I thought that they were the critical pieces of that team that put Czechia on a path to be a goal away from the gold medal. One of the just most tremendous efforts. That team was fantastic. Juracek was out of his mind in that tournament. So good. Spacek played the best hockey I had seen him play to that point or since. That was a team possessed. Duplicating that this year is going to be difficult. They've got goaltending, which helps. You've got, you know, the potential of Michael Hrabal if he is going to be your number one. You've got, you know, some guys like Kulik, like Edward Schala, you know, that can make an impact for you. I don't think that they will have that same team. The other thing is Adam Juracek, who's one of the good young players, was injured recently. I think he'll be ready for the World Juniors, but he was injured recently. And so you want to have him in as well because he can make a difference. But the Czechs have some legit pieces here. They have a lot to like, but I don't think that they have enough. And I think not having David Juracek and David Svacek, who were such anchors for that team, playing massive, massive minutes, that's where I see the differences between the two teams. And that's why I don't think they're going to have as much success as they did last year. However, are they a credible threat to get into the medal round? Absolutely. I think they are. I just don't think they have enough to win at all. But that is a very fascinating team and one I really cannot wait to watch as we go forward. All right. We're getting very close to the end here. In fact, this is the final question. And this one comes from Sam. Sleeper pick for a medal? Question mark. Okay, so I kind of teased it before. I really like, at least as it's constructed in its current stage, the Slovak roster. And we don't know if they will get Simon Nemec for this tournament. Odds are not. I would love to see him in it. But, you know, he did get a recent recall to the New Jersey Devils. And we'll have to see. But if they do happen to get Simon Nemec back, that gives them some really good defense. Maxim Štrbák was awesome at the World Juniors last year. I thought that was some of the best hockey he played all season. I've liked him at Michigan State this year. I think he could be a difference maker. But if you don't have Nemec, I feel like your depth on the blue line takes a significant hit. The other thing is Guyon. He almost beat Canada. Just remember, Canada was on two occasions with an absolute wagon of a team last year, a goal away from losing both in the quarterfinals and in the gold medal game. One of their best games was against Team USA, where they just flat out dominated, especially in the second half of that game. They had fallen behind early, if you'll recall. This Slovakian team is going to have more draft picks than they're used to having, for one. You know, they've got Adam Sikora from the New York Rangers. They've got Martin Mishiak, who was drafted by the Chicago Blackhawks last year and had a tremendous run in the Clark Cup playoffs last year. They have Philip Mašar, who's been a top-tier player for them. Samuel Hanzek, Dalibor Dvorsky. The Slovak team. USA is going to have to play this Slovak team in the preliminary round. USA's got Czechia and Slovakia both in their group, Switzerland and Norway also. So it's the weaker of the two groups. On the other side, you have Canada, Finland, and Sweden, and then Latvia and Germany. So USA is going to have their hands full. Don't forget, they lost to Adam Guyon and this Slovakia team last year. But you look at what they have up front. Alex Čiernik, Dalibor Dvorsky, Samuel Hanzik, Filip Mašar, Martin Mešiak, Juraj Pekarčík, Cervak Petrovský, Adam Sikora, Adam Žlinka. All of those guys are drafted. And then you've also got some younger players that, you know, could potentially make an impact for the team. They've got size up front. They have decent size on the back end. And then they've got the goaltending. If Adam Guyon plays to his capabilities, this is a team that is going to threaten. They are going to threaten teams. And if you get them in the wrong time in the crossover, you're going to lose. And that is, Canada almost experienced that last year. So this is a team that upset USA. And if they can get Simon Nemec back, all of a sudden we're saying, hey, this might be the fourth best team in this tournament, even above Finland, who we haven't talked about yet. They don't have their roster out yet. We'll talk about them next week. But do not sleep on Slovakia with all the talent that they have. And don't forget that this age group has had success internationally at other events. Won bronze at the under eight, or was a goal away from winning bronze at the under 18s last year. Won silver at the Holinka Gretzky Cup 1 year. So this is a team that if you are sleeping on them, you will suffer for that because they have talent. Excuse me. I had to get one more cough in, I guess, before the end of the episode. All right. So lots of exciting things are happening. One thing I did want to let all of you guys know about now that our Q&A is over is we have a new member of our team on at Flow Hockey, Liz Child. Follow her at L-I-Z-Z Child on Twitter. Liz is joining our team after a year with the San Jose Barracuda. She also covered the WHL. She's going to be an associate content creator with us specifically for hockey. So make sure you give her a follow. I believe she'll be on the show next week. We'll be coming to you live from Austin next week in the Flow Studios as we get down to home base for a little bit. And Liz is a great teammate already. She just started this week. Deeply passionate about hockey, tremendously knowledgeable about junior hockey, and she's going to be helping us really level up our content. I'm super excited. We've grown so much. That's thanks to you guys. We're going to hopefully continue to grow. So you'll see Liz pop on the show every now and again. You'll see a lot more content on Flow Hockey as well. So get over to flowhockey.tv right away. Thanks to everybody that asked questions today. Huge thanks to Amanda for producing today. And thanks to all of you for tuning in and listening. It's been a lot of fun. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast. Leave us a kind rating and review. And we will keep this train rolling. Lots more World Junior talk coming next week. And then we'll be off to Sweden for the big tournament. Hope you guys are enjoying the holiday season. Hope you're getting excited for World Juniors. Much more to come. That's going to do it for this week's episode of Talking Hockey Sense. I'm Chris Peters. We'll catch you next time.